Hello and welcome to World Radio, a production of HCJB World Radio, Melbourne, Australia. Now here's your host, Eric Scatterbo.
Thank you, Derek, and welcome to World Radio, the program that introduces you to interesting people, places, and things located throughout the world. And today we start off focusing on India, and specifically the southwestern state of Kerala, or Kerala. Our guest today is Sunny Philip from Kerala State in India. Now, when one thinks of Indian religious traditions, several major world religions come to mind, like Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam. However, what is not as well known is that Christianity has been in India since its earliest days. According to tradition, the Apostle Thomas arrived in Kerala State in 52 AD, and there has been a Christian community in that state for hundreds of years. Our guest Sunny Philip will tell us more about Kerala's Christian heritage and also share about his own spiritual journey. That and more information on Asia's Christian heritage in general will be coming up on today's edition of World Radio. Joining me in the studio today is Sunny Philip. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And you are from India?
That is correct, yes.
Now, I understand that you are from a part of India that has had a Christian heritage all the way back to the first century. Is that correct?
Well, the tradition is that Kerala had Christian presence most likely from 52 AD. That is, St. Thomas, one of the apostles, is presumed to have come and preached the gospel in Kerala and converted people and established a church. But it is historically proven that there were Christians in Kerala right from 2nd, 3rd century AD. So we are talking about 150, 200 AD, there were already Christians. Many of them were migrants from the Middle East, but many of them were also Indian Christians. My own local church in my little village is most likely 1,200 years old.
Wow, that goes way back.
It does, long before Captain Cook came to Australia.
Wow, now that, talk about heritage. That's going way back. Now, a lot of people think of Christianity as being foreign to the East, that it was kind of imported over here from the West. But according to your heritage of your community where you're from in India, that's not the case.
Definitely not in Kerala. We were Christians definitely long before England or America were Christian. But I suppose it is possible for people to misunderstand the version of Christianity that we have in India as Western, because it has come through the colonial powers and white missionary groups. But Christianity itself has definitely been in India long before the Western people came to India.
And so you grew up in one of those traditions, is that correct?
That is correct. We are called the Surian Christians of Kerala. In fact, we also have a synagogue in one of our towns, which predates the Christian church. So it is very possible that the early church, with this tradition of visiting synagogues around the world, like Apostle Paul did, would have come to Kerala, to the synagogue, because there was a Jewish community there. And still, there is quite a vibrant Jewish community in our part of India. So they would have come and preached the gospel to their own people initially, and then converted the local people into a community. There is a tradition also that the local Maharaja gave certain rights and privileges to this Christian community and accepted them into the community as a separate entity, so they could live there peacefully and coexist with the Indian people without any let or hindrance for many, many years and continue to practice their Christian religion.
Now, to this day, are there landmarks that you could see in your state?
There are several old churches, and there are also a couple of copper plate inscriptions that are preserved in one of our museums, which were the rights and privileges given to them by the Maharaja in the old South Indian script. So that will all predate easily 1500 years, 1700 years before what we are talking about now.
Hmm.
So quite ancient scripts are there, so there is some tradition, yeah.
Hmm. India is so interesting, such a wide, diverse number of religious faiths there, all converging in one country. It's amazing.
Well, this is right. I mean, of course, it is the birthplace of two major religions mm-hmm. in the world, Hinduism and Buddhism. And, of course, then it has adopted Islam and Christianity, which came from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our own variants of the religions, like the Parsis and the Sikhs and the Jains. And so, mm-hmm. yes, it's all there.
Wow, quite a variety there. Now, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you personally. You, as you mentioned, you were raised in this Christian heritage, but you did not have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Is that correct?
When you are brought up in the Christian environment, you keep thinking that you are a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not until you have to stand outside and look at what you actually believe, you realize that you probably didn't believe much.
Hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you did not have faith, but it was not a choice. It was not an active faith. So that's where, yes, I think you are right in saying that I was not a believing Christian in the strict sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
I was a practicing Christian in that I went to church, I attended prayers, I would have read the Bible, but other than that, I did not have an active faith in Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Now, what happened? How did you go from that to being a believer in Jesus Christ?
Well, when I was 17 years old, when I finished my high school, my father was extremely disappointed with me. I remember very clearly he called me into the common room where I sat with him, and he said, "Son, if there is one disappointment in my life, that's you.
Hmm.
And I would like you to leave this home and go anywhere you want to." Now, I know that he meant it well. He was disappointed in me, and he realized that for my sake, I had to leave.
Hmm.
It was also important for the sake of the family that I left, because my behavior at that time was not conducive to our family atmosphere.
Hmm.
So he sent me away about 700, 800 kilometers to a major city in South India, where it was understood that I would learn English for a year and then hopefully go somewhere else to study. And that is where I came across a gentleman from New Zealand
mm-hmm.
who was a principal of that theological college. And I remember very clearly appearing at his doorstep on a Saturday afternoon around 2 o'clock. I'm pretty sure that he would have been having his rest after lunch
mm-hmm.
On the day off. And he opened the door, invited me in, made me a cup of coffee, and asked me why I was there. And when I told him that I would like to study at your school, he said, "Well, the school started 3 months ago.
Hmm.
You are 3 months late." I said, "But sir, I would still like to study." So he put me in his car, drove me to the school, opened his office on the Saturday afternoon at about 3:30, gave me an application form, and sat with me as I filled the application form, because in those days I couldn't speak much English and I needed help. So I remember him taking me step by step, helping me fill this application form. And then we came to this question which said, write your testimony. So, of course, I didn't know what the word testimony meant. So I asked him, what does it mean? He said, "Oh, that means how or when you became a Christian." And I remember saying to him, "But sir, I have always been a Christian. I'm born in a Christian home."
Hmm.
He said, "But surely you must have had a special experience of Christ in your life, a personal relationship with Christ." And I remember sitting there thinking through, trying to identify something that I could connect with God and faith in my life. And the only thing I could think of was saying to him, "Yes, sir, when I was 13 years old, my bishop gave me communion." And this man looked at me, initially surprised. Then he said, "Well, that's good enough." And I filled the application form. I was in. But as I look back at that event, now, many years later, I said to myself, why did this man do that? here he was, an evangelical, born-again Christian missionary, mm-hmm. trying, they're preaching the gospel in India, and yet he made this amazing compromise for me.
That's right, because I'd imagine technically they usually say you had to have had some type of born-again experience to get into the school, but yet he chose wisely to say, well, it's close enough.
Well, I mean, it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, I look at it. He could have told me, son, the school has started 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Come back next year.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand. I couldn't blame him for that. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even fill an application form. I just appeared in front of his house on a Saturday afternoon, didn't I? He could have told me, look, the office is closed. My secretaries have gone home. Can you come on Monday morning? Come to my office at 9 o'clock. In fact, thinking about it, it is very unlikely I would have gone back on Monday morning at 9 o'clock, because I would have been so discouraged by then, because I'm already discouraged sent away from home.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been already so discouraged, I have no idea what would have happened to me.
Mm.
And he could have said, son, go and become a Christian first. Mm-hmm. Have some faith and then come back, because this is a theological seminary where people with convictions come. And you don't seem to have it.
Hmm.
So he would have been right in saying all that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, here he was. He broke every one of his rules that he, what was precious to him,
mm-hmm.
That he came to India to promote.
Mm-hmm.
And saying to me, it's all right. To me, this is the epitome of grace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where God broke his own rules to take me in, accept me into his family. And that's exactly what Ian did. So here he is already paying a big price and could be misunderstood for compromising his theological standards.
Mm-hmm.
But he was prepared to do that. For some reason, he believed in me
mm-hmm.
and wanted to give me a break, a second chance in life when my own father was not prepared to do that.
And that must have just touched you deeply.
I didn't realize what he was doing at that time. It was about 18 months later that I made a commitment to following Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to understand what it means to be accepted when you have no claims for acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But further on, I began to realize it even more fully. The extent of what this gentleman was doing in my life, because 32 years later, I would meet him again,
hmm.
this time in his own home country, in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I met him briefly for about 15 minutes at Auckland Airport. He came there to see me when he heard I was going to be at the airport. And as we sat there, we talked about life. And then he said he was going back to India. So I was surprised. I said, are you still involved in ministry there? He said, no, but my daughter lives there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, what's your daughter doing there? Is she a missionary? He said, no. In fact, she just did not believe in the God of the Bible. And I began to be surprised. I said, but how can that be? Then he began to explain to me, and I don't want to go to the details of that. He began to explain to me what has happened to his daughter, how she walked away from her faith. As I stood up to say goodbye to him and to walk away to board my plane, we hugged each other. And as he hugged me, I whispered in his ear and I said, Ian, I just want to say thank you very much. And I said, would you please accept me as a son?
Hmm.
Would you please accept me in the place of someone you have lost? Because if you had not come to India, and if you have not paid that high price, I wonder what would have happened to me.
Mm.
Because you came, I am here to share with you the story. And I could see that as I walked away, he would have been glad to hear my story. But still, I wondered, there would be times when he would think, maybe if I had not gone to India, I would have my family together.
Hmm.
My grandchildren would go to a church. This is a high price he paid.
Hmm.
And to me, that is grace.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that story. And we should let our listeners know that because of the grace that that principal of that school in India showed you, as you mentioned, about 18 months later, you put your faith in Jesus Christ, accepted him as your personal Savior. And now, fast forward 30-some years later, you have been serving the Lord in ministry. Can you just kind of give us an overview of your work in ministry?
Well, these days I'm involved in a number of things, and I'm so privileged to have these wonderful opportunities to be a traveling minister. One of the major areas of my involvement is here now in Australia,
mm-hmm.
Ministering to people, churches. I speak at conventions, groups. But my main aim is to be a blessing to the Australian church.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that when God touches a person's heart, they will know exactly what to do with that heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not here to tell people what to do or how to respond to God. I'm here to share with them what a great God we have.
Amen.
The other areas of my involvement, I am a lecturer with a leadership training college called the Hagia Institute, which has training centers in Hawaii and in Singapore. So I travel to both places teaching leaders, Christian leaders from developing countries. I just did that in Singapore last week, and we had 60 people from 32 countries.
Wow.
It was just an unbelievable experience to be there with some of the top leaders sitting there and having an input into their lives. I also am more extending my own time in India now. I was a chaplain at the Christian Medical College and Hospital in Vellore, an amazing place to be. It has a story of its own about what God can do with one person. It's a story of an American young lady who came to India to stay and look after her mother, who was a missionary in India. And while she stayed with her one night, she personally witnessed the death of three women in childbirth.
Hmm.
All three women died because their husbands will not allow her father to look after these women, because it was a taboo for a man to touch a woman or look at her nakedness, even though he was delivering their babies and saving the lives of their wives. But the husbands will not do that. So one night, three women died.
Hmm.
And the following day, Ida Scudder, her name, she made up her mind that she cannot fight a system, evil it may be, bad and negative it may be, but she will do something special. She will bring Jesus into the system and then allow Jesus to change the system from within. It was a fantastic pattern, a great paradigm for Christian ministry. So she did that. At the age of 19, confronted by this death, she goes back to the United States, trained herself to become a doctor, she did, and came back to India as a full-fledged doctor and started by herself on the side of a dusty road in India, what is today internationally known as the Christian Medical College and Hospital, with more than 650 doctors, over 1,400 nurses, 6,000 staff, 3,500 outpatients a day, 1,700 beds. You think of the biggest hospital in Australia, it is bigger than that.
Wow.
Just an unbelievable place. And I had the opportunity with my wife, who is a medical doctor, to be there for 9 years and serve God in that capacity. And we are in the process of developing a ministry to our own staff, caring for them pastorally. So this is one of the new things that I'm trying to do at the moment.
Wow, it's exciting. So just to kind of wrap things up, your father at that point in your life that you shared was kind of disappointed in you. How does he feel about you now?
My father passed away about 8 years ago, but he died a very proud man. In fact, the sweetest thing I remember about him is just the week before he died, I had the opportunity to spend an entire week with him, just the two of us. Driving, I was his chauffeur, driving him to many places because he had business dealings and he wanted me to do that. And we sat and talked. And he was so proud of what happened. In fact, about 10 years after I made a commitment to following Christ, he and my mother and many other members of my family made a similar commitment.
Wow.
And he was a Sunday school teacher, and my own brother is a voluntary preacher now, and the whole family was revolutionized. And, you know, as I said earlier, and as we were talking before, all because one person was prepared to do what God wanted him to do. And, as I said, break his own rules and exercise God's grace. And saying, I will give this young fellow the benefit of the doubt and give him a second chance.
That's fantastic. And, of course, that's the grace that God shows us. There are the Ten Commandments, the rules that we're all supposed to follow in our lives. But, unfortunately, we all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We all make mistakes. But he sent his son Jesus that whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. So we have grace extended to all of us, and that grace is still available to anybody listening today.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing. Sonny Phillip is the National Ministry Director for InterServe.
You're listening to World Radio. If you have comments or questions, our email address is info, that's I-N-F-O, at hcjb.org.au.
As World Radio continues, we next turn our focus to Asia in general. Earlier, we learned about India's Christian heritage going all the way back to the first century, and now we'll learn about the rest of Asia and its Christian heritage. Christianity is sometimes described as a Western religion, meaning that it has been influential primarily in the West, that is, Europe and North America. Indeed, at the beginning of the 20th century, 64% of all Christians lived in Europe and North America. However, things have been rapidly changing over the past 100 years, and now Christianity is experiencing its largest growth in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. So it is hardly a Western religion anymore. And according to history, Christianity was never exclusively Western. If we dig into it, we find that the gospel has a long, noble, and interesting history in Asia. Missionary and historian Dr. Samuel Moffat has written a book on the subject, and he says that, in fact, the church began in Asia. Its earliest history, its first centers were Asian. Asia produced the first known church building, the first New Testament translation, perhaps the first Christian king, the first Christian poets, and even arguably the first Christian state. Asian Christians endured the greatest persecutions. They mounted global ventures and missionary expansion that the West could not match until the 13th century. What some people may forget is that Jesus himself was Asian and that Christianity began in Asia. Jesus spent all of his earthly life in Palestine on the continent of Asia, and the early church had its strongest congregations in Asia Minor, which is now modern Turkey. When the church began on the day of Pentecost, there were plenty of Asians there, most likely from modern Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. So undoubtedly, among the 3,000 who were baptized on that day, some of them were Asians. They returned to their homes with much to tell about Jesus. The Apostle Paul went first to the cities of Asia Minor, and in the Bible, the books of Galatians, Ephesians, and Colossians were epistles written to Asian churches. The churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were all in Asia Minor. So Christianity has its roots in the western part of the Asian continent. Interestingly, Christianity may have played a bigger role in Asia if it had not been for a gigantic missed opportunity. The story goes that in the 12th century, the Polos, an Italian merchant family, journeyed to China and were well received at the court of the great Kublai Khan. Before they returned to Italy, Kublai Khan requested them to ask the Pope to send 100 teachers of science and religion to instruct the Chinese in the learning and faith of Europe. The Pope only managed to send two Dominican friars with the Polos in November of 1271, but a war frightened the two friars and even they turned back. The Polos, including young Marco, continued their journey to the Chinese emperor without the requested religious teachers. How might the history of Christianity in Asia have been different had this incomparable opportunity been seized? And as we mentioned earlier in the program, according to church tradition, the Apostle Thomas came to India in 52 AD. Now, when Marco Polo traveled through India in the 13th century and Vasco da Gama landed there in the late 15th century,
they both found Christians continuing the liturgy of the ancient Syrian church. Although the Indian rulers at that time prevented extensive evangelism among the populace, the Malabar Indian Christians had been able to pass their beliefs to their children for centuries. In China in the 7th century, the ruling dynasty hospitably received foreigners at its court. Among these were a large number of Nestorian Christians. Portions of scripture, including the Sermon on the Mount, were translated into Chinese. Even into the 9th century, Arab traders visiting China recorded the Chinese emperor's knowledge of Noah, the prophets, Moses, and Jesus. When the Muslim Arabs conquered large portions of Asia beginning in the 7th century, it became illegal for Christians to evangelize or actively seek converts to their faith. The Christian communities already established in different parts of Asia, like India, Persia, and Mesopotamia, clung to their past and became ghettos in a non-Christian culture and society. However, early traditions and liturgies continued for centuries, some even to this day. For more information, see Samuel Hugh Moffat's book, A History of Christianity in Asia, published by Harper & Row. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of World Radio as we've been learning about Asia's Christian heritage. If you have any questions about Christianity in general, please write to us here at HCJB Australia. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. That's info@hcjb.org.au. Well, we appropriately end today's program focusing on Christianity in Asia with some Indian Christian music. Until next time, I'm Eric Scadabo saying so long and God bless.
களிகூறு மகனே பயவேண்டாம், மகிழ்ந்து களி கூறு மகளே பயவேண்டாம். அன்னவன் இயேசு உன்னடுவில் பெரிய காரியம்
செய்திடுவான்.
மகிழ்ந்து களி கூறு மகனே பயவேண்டாம், அன்னவன் இயேசு உன்னடுவில் பெரிய காரியம் செய்திடுவான்.
You have been listening to World Radio. We're always interested in your comments and questions. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. Our mailing address is World Radio, HCJB Australia, GPO Box 691, Melbourne 3001, Australia. To listen online, go to hcjb.org/Australia. Thanks for listening. Please join us next time for another edition of World Radio.